We are going to switch over to talking about Hmong Americans with Vincent Herr, who is an assistant professor of cultural anthropology at the University of Wisconsin at La Crosse. He's one of the editors of Hmong and American, From Refugees to Citizens, and he joins us today from our Milwaukee studios. Vincent, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So we just talked about Native Americans in Wisconsin and the upper Midwest. And now we're going to talk with you about Hmong Americans. I think that, you know, our culture is so much richer for all the different threads that are woven through the fabric. And the Hmong are one of the more recent additions to Wisconsin. First, let's talk about where the Hmong people originated and where they mainly came from immediately before arriving in the U.S. and Canada.
Sure. And that, I think that history dates back a couple of thousands of years to China, obviously. And then starting in the mid-1800s, many immigrated or made an exodus out of China into Southeast Asia, where they live under French colonial rule. They also had gone through the Vietnam War, especially the part in Laos. And that is sort of the history that brought them into this country. So beginning in the early 70s, many escaped Laos to from the communist regime there to establish or to live in many camps in along the Thai border. And thereafter, many came to this country as refugee immigrants. I am one of those.
And what does the term Hmong mean for the Hmong people?
Well, I mean, that word has been given so many definitions. For example, back in the 1970s, when the Hmong in Laos were being pushed and being persecuted, many scholars believe that the word free was an appropriate definition. But I don't think that it's a suitable term or definition for the term. Because if you look at Hmong history, it extends back through time, many, many centuries. And for me, Hmong basically means a people, an ethnic group with a unique heritage, unique culture, and perhaps a unique outlook on life.
And the Hmong were very strong allies of the U.S. government during the war in Southeast Asia, particularly during what's referred to as the secret war in Laos. What happened when the U.S. withdrew from Laos?
Well, the U.S. withdrew from Laos in 1975, in May of 1975, I believe. And shortly thereafter, many who sided with the U.S., working for the CIA, ended up running or hiding in the jungles to stay alive. Okay? And, you know, I can recall those experiences because I lived through that period. And so for about 4 years, or depending on the group, one to two to three or four years, and they end up hiding and just trying to stay alive, eating whatever they can.
Hiding in the jungles.
Yes, hiding in the jungles.
And so how then did the Hmong people come to settle in the U.S. or Canada, wherever they ended up?
Well, back in Thailand, when the refugees started coming in, what the Thai government wanted to do was to basically push the U.S. to take in as many refugees as it could at the time. And at that time, the U.S. also had been friends with Canada and other countries, Australia, for example. And so they've been able to talk those countries into taking Hmong refugees, even though they were taken in smaller numbers. But the majority came here to the U.S. because I think that there is a sense of obligation on the part of the U.S. government to the Hmong soldiers who were fighting with the CIA in Laos.
And even if there was a sense of obligation and support from the U.S. government for the Hmong soldiers and their families, obviously, for supporting the U.S. efforts in Laos, it seems like that was not well understood by the general U.S. population.
Up to this point, no, and largely because that part of the of U.S. history, that part of U.S. history in Southeast Asia, especially the part in Laos, has been pretty much ignored by scholars, researchers, and writers. And part of my effort, I think, is to bring out that aspect of the war, to make it known so that others will understand Hmong Americans better as they integrate into this this society.
Vincent Herr is an assistant professor of cultural anthropology at the University of Wisconsin in La Crosse. He's one of the editors of Hmong and American, From Refugees to Citizens. He's joining us today from our Milwaukee studios. If you have a question for Vincent, please give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. If you are not Hmong, do you feel like you have a sense of their culture and beliefs? What would you like to know but haven't had the opportunity to ask? And if you're Hmong, what has your experience been? What do you wish other people would understand about your culture? We'd be happy to hear from you and to have you join the conversation. Vincent, how many Hmong are there estimated to be in the U.S. now?
According to the 2010 census, there are about 260,000. Of that number, about 49,000 lives in Wisconsin. So we have quite a large Hmong population here. In the Milwaukee area, there are about 8 to 10,000 Hmong residents.
Wow. And as you said, there's a large population in the upper Midwest. As I read in the book, of the five states that have the largest Hmong populations, two are in the upper Midwest, Minnesota and Wisconsin. Why is it that so many Hmong ended up in the northern central part of the country?
That has always been a mystery, and no one can answer that. But I can tell you a little bit about my own life experiences, why we came here in the first place. Back in 1979, my uncle was working for the U.S. Immigration and Naturalization Service, and he was working with this interpreter who was a former CIA agent by the name of Jerry Daniels. Now, Jerry Daniels was from Montana, but when my uncle asked him, I am going to go to the U.S., but I'm also looking for a state that has good elementary education, and therefore, which state should I go to? And so Jerry Daniel says, if that's what you're looking for, then Wisconsin is a good place to go. And so my uncle came without knowing anybody here, and we simply followed. And that is what often happens with many Hmong families who ended up here.
One of the interesting themes in the book is what a high value Hmong people put on education, and that there's a real commitment of the whole community to really encourage and in some cases almost, you know, pressure Hmong children and young people to really excel in school.
Yes, that's true, especially very early on. I would say from the 1980s to the 1990s, there is a lot of pressure for people to succeed, because we came from a country where opportunities have been very limited, and therefore many people in the older generation see education as a way out. And I think that pressure has created some success within the Hmong American community. If you look back for the past decade and a half, two decades, many of the Hmong professionals practicing today have grown up in that period from the 1980s to the 1990s. And so I think it has made a good difference, a great difference.
And Patty in Eau Claire has a question. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Thank you for these programs. I live in Eau Claire, and there is a large Hmong population there, and I just see a complete division between the Hmong community and the rest of us. And one of the reasons that I see that is the lack of language skills. It's just hard to talk to each other. You know, you just brought up education and wanting a quality education, but I don't understand how you can get a quality education when the teachers don't speak the language. I would like to know, how does the Hmong community help itself? I mean, it seems to me that if I was Hmong, I would be pushing my community to have interpreters in the schools and in the doctors and clinics offices, like a service where you could call and say, I'm going to the doctor. I need somebody to go with me who can talk to this doctor.
And Patty, we will definitely get to that, to an answer to your question right after our break for the news. Hmong Americans are an important part of the fabric of our life here in Wisconsin and in the United States in general. But for many reasons, there have been unfortunate and sometimes tragic misunderstandings between the dominant culture and these recent immigrants. Hi, I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Happy to have you with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's been a large Hmong population living in Wisconsin for over 30 years now, but what non-Hmong people know and understand about their culture is often minimal or, even worse, often untrue. Vincent Herr is one of the editors of an important new book, Hmong and American, From Refugees to Citizens. Have you interacted with Hmong people in your community? If you are Hmong American, what has your family's experience been in Wisconsin? We'd love to hear from you. Call 1-800-642-1234. And don't forget to visit our Facebook page. If you like the page while you're there, you'll receive regular updates on upcoming show topics. More right after the news. As a nation of immigrants, most of us have a sense of where our ancestors came from many years ago, but our connections are more historical or cultural with a heavy American influence. But for Hmong Americans, many of whom were born in Laos, there is a much more immediate tie to another place and to traditions, religion, and language that has been the glue of their culture. But at the same time, there's a strong loyalty that roots the Hmong as Americans, too. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Glad you could join us today on the Ideas Network. Vincent Herr is an assistant professor of cultural anthropology at the University of Wisconsin in La Crosse. He's one of the editors of Hmong and American, From Refugees to Citizens. He joins us today from our Milwaukee studios. Vincent, thanks again for spending time with us today.
Well, thank you. I'm grateful for this opportunity.
So going back to the question that we had from Patty and Eau Claire, talking about how the Hmong support their own communities, but then also how the Hmong can advocate in the larger dominant community.
Sure. And I think that community advocacy has been in place starting in the 1980s. However, we have to keep in mind that the Hmong community varies from location to location, from community to community. And so in smaller communities such as La Crosse or Eau Claire, the activism is not there yet or hasn't had its impact. But in cities like Milwaukee, the Twin Cities areas, I think the push has been there and it has made a great difference.
And I have to say that one of my first real introductions to the Hmong people was the 1998 book, The Spirit Catches You and You Fall Down. And that was an account of a Hmong child needing serious medical care. And despite the best of intentions on all sides, there were very tragic misunderstandings and miscommunications between her Hmong family and the Western medical staff. Almost 15 years later, are there more resources in place to help both sides of that equation?
I would definitely say so. Many hospitals, for example, in larger cities, such as Milwaukee or the Twin Cities areas, there are Hmong doctors working in many of those places. There are also interpreters that are in place. There is also a willingness on the part of hospitals to accommodate Hmong needs. For example, in Milwaukee, if there is a patient who is seriously ill, what the hospital would do is that they will give or allocate a room to all of the families and relatives who might come and visit the sick person. So in that sense, it has, I think, in some ways opened up the door to more communications, to more interactions, and to figure out ways to meet the needs of Hmong Americans.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that came through in that book was some of the Hmong religious beliefs and for instance, the role of shamans in Hmong religion. And one of the things that the essays in the book, Hmong and American from Refugee to Citizen, brings out is that there is a variety, often generational, between different Hmong people and different Hmong families. Some are exclusively holding on to the traditional religion. Some have adopted Christianity, and some actually have taken some of each.
Sure. And that's been happening. And I think that is a sign that shows that Hmong Americans are adapting to the environment in this country, to whatever this country offers them. Some have remained traditionalists in their beliefs, and yet at the same time, they're also modifying their traditions and their practices so that it remains relevant to the life of younger people in this country.
Mm-hmm. We have Lisa in Wausau on the phone, so let's go there. Hi, Lisa.
Hello. I'm an educator in Wausau, and I have had several Hmong children in my classroom. And when I've mentioned this to people, they have said, well, that must be challenging. And as a matter of fact, it's not. I find the Hmong children to have a very high, strong work ethic, and they are very focused and very determined, and they are very easy to teach. And my question is, where and how and is this work ethic developed in the Hmong community, and how can I instill that into the rest of my students? And my other, I have a second question as well, is there anything else that I can do to be helpful to the Hmong families through my position as an educator? And we do use interpreters for parent-teacher conferences, but are there other ways or other things that I could do?
And Vincent, what would you say for Lisa?
Well, first, the word ethic. That is a difficult question to answer, but what I will do is I will share some of my experiences growing up. I think many of us growing up have faced a very challenging life. For example, those of us growing up in Laos often would go without food for days. And that, I think, is a motivation in itself. Now, the older generation came to this country with that mentality in mind. And so what they wanted to do is for their children to push themselves so that they would have a life that's better than what their parents had. And that is a sort of a discussion, a lesson that's been pressed on children at the dinner table on a regular basis, if not every day. Now, with regards to the aspect of being more helpful to my parents, what we need to keep in mind is that Hmong parents are often very shy about talking to teachers, administrators. They often don't want to complain. And so what you need to do is then, you know, say, ask them politely, what are your inputs? What inputs do you have in terms of, you know, getting information to not just your kids, but to the kids in the classroom?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any ideas that they can offer? And that way you can then get them to open up, to share their ideas and their experiences.
So treating them as partners.
Sure, treating them as partners, being very collaborative, I think, mm-hmm. in the process.
Mm-hmm. Great. Thanks for that call, Lisa. I think, Vincent, one of the confusing elements for non-Hmong people is the concept of clans. Can you explain how clans function and why they're important in Hmong culture?
Sure. The clan is a system in which keeps Hmong together, okay, and also keeps them divided. A clan, a Hmong clan, every Hmong person would carry his or her clan name. For example, my last name is He. That means I belong to the He clan. And so within that clan, there is diversity within that clan, but there is also broad allegiances to that clan. And the way the clan system works is that it has helped to keep people together over the centuries. It has allowed them to find support whenever there is a need for it. Okay? And the need for it are, for example, on a number of occasions during a funeral, Hmong will rely on the clan for help. During a wedding, Hmong also rely on their clan networks for help. During disputes, the clan would also come into play. And so the clan is a basis for which decisions are made. And so there is, again, good and bad that comes out of that system.
And if I remember correctly, it was interesting to me that actually you are expected to marry someone from a different clan.
Yes.
Not to marry within your clan.
Right, right.
And so what's the belief or the idea behind that?
Well, the belief is that everybody in the clan is related by blood if you go back far enough into the past. And so if you are related by blood, you can't marry one another.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Vincent He. He's one of the editors of the new book, Hmong and American, From Refugees to Citizens. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Mueller. You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. If you're not Hmong, do you feel that you have a sense of Hmong culture and beliefs? What would you like to know? What would you like Vincent maybe to explain for you? And if you are Hmong, what has your experience been? And what do you wish other people would understand about your culture? We would love to hear from you. And Vincent, I think that one of the most powerful essays for me in the book, Hmong and American, is called The Good Hmong Girl Eats Raw Lab. What's the idea of a good Hmong girl, and what is the author Kaveng rebelling against?
What the idea of a good Hmong girl, and again, this is building on sort of the traditional belief or sort of the norms and values that have guided Hmong culture for centuries back in Laos. A good Hmong girl back in Laos is someone who would stay home, someone who would listen to her mom or dad, someone who would sew for the whole family, someone who would cook, clean, and so on. Now, in this country, we know that Hmong girls can't be raised with those same values anymore. Hmong girls must also pursue an education. They must also pursue a career. They must also eventually raise their own families. And so the idea is that the idea from that essay is that Hmong girls should be given the opportunity to explore who they are. They should be given the opportunity to perhaps question their own culture and take what is good from that and also fix what has not been working so well.
And actually, that's a great segue to talk with Kajua from Madison, who's on the line. Hi, Kajua.
Hi.
Hi, thanks for calling. And I know you're calling to talk about the group that you work with, which is Freedom Inc.
Yes.
Tell us what Freedom Inc. does.
So Freedom Inc. is a nonprofit organization based in Madison, and we've been around for about 10 years. We predominantly work with Southeast Asians, mostly Hmong youth, women, and girls, and more recently working with African-American women and girls and gender nonconforming folks.
And so what has your experience been, Kajua, working on issues of violence and gender equality with, I'm guessing, often a younger generation of Hmong and other Southeast Asian women, but also with the older generations?
Yes, in our daily work, we work with domestic violence victims and survivors. Also, children who witness or are survivors and victims of sexual assault. I think, you know, it's a very challenging topic to be working on just because these are silenced issues in all communities,
right,
particularly in our community. And so I think that it is a challenging issue to be working on.
And Kajua, Vincent and I were just talking about the essay called The Good Hmong Girl Eats Raw Lab in this collection, and the concept of the good Hmong girl. And for you as a young Hmong woman, what has the experience been personally working in your community and working on, as you said, issues that are often kind of kept behind closed doors?
I think at the beginning, when we first started doing this work 10 years ago, it was a lot harder. I remember just organizations that served Hmong people in town wouldn't even partner with us because they thought that we were, number one, led by women, number two, mostly young people, and then, like, working on issues of violence against women and children was, they're all very sensitive topics. And so it was very hard to, like, even collaborate with folks in town. But after 10 years, I think that the community is coming around. And as you know, like, our work, we don't publicize our work, but that just through word of mouth, like, we've been able to, like, help hundreds of Hmong women throughout the city and throughout the state. And so that says a lot about our work, that it's heavily needed, even though it's such a sensitive topic.
Great. Thank you very much, Kajua. And if people want to find out more about Freedom Inc., other than word of mouth, what's the best way to find that?
So we have a website. We're also on Facebook, Freedom Inc. Madison on Facebook, or www.aboutfreedominc.com. And, you know, I think that it'll be great if people can check out our Facebook and see what else other things we're doing that our work has been so successful in our own community that we're also now working with folks who identify as queer or LGBTQ in the Hmong community and in the Black community.
Great.
Go ahead. And also working with Cambodian communities.
Great. Thank you so much for calling, Kajua.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks. And Vincent, the work that Kajua is talking about with Freedom Inc., do you see more and more of that with as you refer to it as the, there's the original Hmong generation that grew up as adults in Laos and came here. Then there's the 1.5 generation that were born in Laos but came here as children or young adults. And then there are people that were born here, obviously very strongly identified as Hmong, but also very deeply rooted in the U.S. Do you see a lot of that type of activism like Kajua was talking about in that most recent generation?
Yes, I do. And I also see a need for it much more so for now than perhaps maybe in the 1980s. Back in the 1980s, the Hmong American community hasn't adjusted, and therefore much the view of the majority were in some ways still very conservative, very traditional. But starting in 2000, I think there is a sort of expansion of what the meaning of what Hmong means, what the meaning of what it means to be American, what it means to be Hmong. And as the younger people start to explore these two concepts, Hmong and American, they are starting to integrate the different perspectives into their ways of life, and including issues of being gay, lesbian, and transgender, and so on. And so that, I think, has created a channel for which Hmong Americans can debate the various aspects of their identity and the process that they're going through, and how they can come to terms with what is changing in their community.
There is an essay in the book Hmong and American about LGBT Hmong youth, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender Hmong youth. And while those profiled had difficulty coming out as gay to their families and were told that their choice, quote unquote, would impact the status of the entire family and respect and honor and things like that, there were also some pretty encouraging surprises, and some of the young people really felt eventually at least supported and loved by their families for who they really were.
Sure, that's true. And I think in dealing with many of these cultural issues, there's always an issue of fear from not knowing, fear from not discussing things. And I think as Hmong people accept the fact that indeed there are a variety of views and perspectives out there, and once they have this discussion, they can have this helpful or constructive discussion, then there is going to be change, there is going to be more acceptance, there is going to be more helpful resources out there in helping people, not only those who are going through it, but the parents and the older generation to deal with it, I think.
And Glenn in Richland Center is on the phone. Let's go there next. Hi, Glenn.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
I have Hmong hunters come out to my property every fall. They're hunting squirrels. There's about five or six of them. And I've never met a nicer bunch of people. A lot of the Hmong hunters get a bad reputation because of a few things that happen, which happens in any society. But these guys, just to show an example, they were squirrel hunting one day, and one of the guys, they always have radios, he called back and he talked to the leader. He said, I have the turkey up here. Can I shoot that? And the leader says, no, you shoot that turkey. You'll never come out here again. And just an example of how they abide by the law. There may be some things they don't quite understand. Now, this is the Chang clan, and I've been invited to come to their New Year's Eve party in Milwaukee, but I haven't been able to make it because it always falls right in the middle of deer season, and that comes first, I guess.
But you've had very good experiences.
Oh, I have a very good experience. They always make squirrel stew, and they do it a little different than we do. They burn the hair off the squirrel. They don't skin it. And this is probably a carryover from living in the jungle because they had to eat whatever they could get. And they do get the squirrel, and then they cook it up with their stew, and it's got little red hot peppers they put in there. And our neighbor really didn't want to meet the Hmong that much. He's been a small town boy all his life. And but I told him, come on down and have some stew. Well, he came down, and I said, make sure you got a beer in your hand. Well, he He had the beer in his hand, he ate the stew, and he ate the little red pepper. And later I told him, the Hmong don't eat the red peppers, they throw them out. They just cook with it.
Yeah.
And now he knows when he comes down, he'll come down every time, and he brings his children down and everyone else. They've gotten to know the Hmong real well, too, and they're glad to see him.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Glenn. And Vincent, I think it's those kind of interactions, even, you know, very casual interactions like that, especially over something like shared food, that can really help understanding on both sides.
Sure, definitely, definitely. And thank you for that. That's a wonderful story. It's always nice to get those feedback. And I know that I have hunters in my family. They have hunted in Richland, in the Richland area. So many of those could have been my relatives. So thank you for that comment. And indeed, if you haven't tried Hmong food or squirrel stew, please do so. And you can ask a Hmong family to help you prep it the way they like and see if you enjoy it. If you do, do learn how to learn how to cook it from them.
There we go. And we have Chong in Appleton next. Hi, Chong.
Hello. I would like to share a little bit about my experiences in this country.
Please
I've
do.
I've been here for quite a while. I try to adapt to American society. I was in school for mechanic, and I worked for mechanic for about 15 years. When I get older, I worked for the public school as interpreter for 10 years, and the rest of the year, I worked for Lutheran Social Services as outreach worker.
So you're one of those people that's really helping create those bridges.
Well, we try, but we worry so much that that's what I'm going to say, that Hmong are here physically and not really spiritually.
Hmm.
Our own generation will not adapt, and maybe the new generation, there's a hope, but it will be a little hope. I hope things go well for the Hmong people.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Chong. And Vincent, I think one of the themes that comes through in the book is that there is a generational difference, that the latest generation of Hmong young people really do feel very Hmong in identity, but equally American in their identity.
And that's always been true. And part of the inspiration for the book was my own work with students, with Hmong American students. And one of the things that they go through is the search for who they are. And for many Hmong Americans born in this country, they don't have that opportunity to explore in depth the history, the culture, until they are in their freshman or sophomore year in college. And and so when they come with these painful stories, it just catches the attention of professors who are, you know, having them in class. And for me, that experience is what also inspired the ideas behind the book.
Well, and Vincent Herr, it's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you so much for joining us today.
No problem.
Vincent Herr is an assistant professor of cultural anthropology at the University of Wisconsin in La Crosse. He's one of the editors of Hmong and American, From Refugees to Citizens. I'm Judith Sears-Poisson, sitting in for Larry Miller today. Hope you'll join us tomorrow when we will talk about birds on the 4th of July. Thanks for listening.